You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
This week on Dear Science, we are joined by our expert, Dr. Daniel Thomas, an honorary academic at the University of Auckland and research associate with Auckland War Memorial Museum, Tāmaki Paengahira. We've got a few animal-themed topics today. Did you want to get started on our first one? It's about snake antibiotics from snake and spider venom.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dear Science, thanks for that intro. Dear Science listeners might recall that back in May, the session regular here, Kushla, shared a story about an unusual way of developing an anti-venom.
I remember that. That was interesting.
Right, which was this person who had spent their life being bitten by snakes. Ooh. And who had developed their own unusual biochemistry, and researchers had come along and extracted something out of that person and had led that through to trial. So the first story I'm bringing this week is a slightly different method of developing anti-venom, and it's a different approach to finding these useful molecules. So spiders, snakes, and scorpions are among a group of animals that produce these venom-encrypted peptides, which are just really short proteins that can have some nasty effects if they're delivered to another organism through a snake bite, for example. Mm. And while no one really wants to be on the receiving end of most people don't want to be on the receiving end of one of these bites. There are actually times when having these harmful compounds inside of us can be useful. And that's when these are things like antimicrobials, when we want to actually get rid of infections. And so that's the thinking here. So researchers at the University of Pennsylvania have been searching through 40 million of these venom-encrypted peptides to find some that might become the next generation of antimicrobials. And AI modeling has been doing the work of searching through these 40 million. They've narrowed it down to a short list of 386 with the right characteristics, and they made 58 of those. And they've tested them, and 53 of them did the trick. They actually knocked out these drug-resistant bacteria, including E. coli and Staphylococcus aureus, in lab trials at levels that were actually harmless to human red blood cells.
Ooh. Yeah. What is the benefit of this research?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a way of developing this next generation of drugs, of these therapeutic compounds that can be used for treatment. So what these researchers are doing is just looking across biodiversity at compounds that in nature are actually doing this work of attacking microbials and then just bringing them in and turning them into drug development.
Oh, so they would get it directly from the snake venom?
No, so they would make synthetic versions of them.
Oh, so that's interesting, because I was going to say, I'm not sure, because there's a lot of ethical issues with that.
Yeah. I don't think they'll be harvesting snakes to do this, but what they're doing is they're using snakes, which have obviously evolved these compounds. Evolution's done the work here. AI has narrowed them down, and then people have gone, great, we can use those ones. So that's the story.
Mm. I see that you've used AI in this. I can't imagine that's... Well, I mean, I imagine that's quite a new process with scientific research. Is there any potential for error in that kind, in the use of AI, or like that's a lot of data that you have to look through, I suppose?
No, absolutely. So that's really the story here, that because it's such a vast database and it would take so long to search through it without these techniques, that the AI is really just providing that filtering approach, but then that's when the humans step in, and then they take that shortlist and then are supervising it from there on out. So
yeah, right on. I'll move on to our next topic. We've got this article you've shared about saber-toothed tiger extinction. Did you want to talk about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So saber-toothed tigers are these iconic Ice Age cats. There were a few different species across the time that they were on this planet, and they lived in North and South America, and they became extinct around 10,000 years ago, which was the end of the last Ice Age. And there are a few ideas about why they went extinct. Mm-hmm. And so one of them was, well, maybe they were just cold weather cats, and so when it became warm, the environment got too warm for them and it no longer suited them. Or maybe they were outcompeted by other big cats. So not too many people know that North America had things like lions as well as a type of cheetah and other big cats. And then the third idea is, well, their prey disappeared, so maybe the big cats disappeared when their prey disappeared. And that's the most credible idea. But some researchers this week have actually published some results where they have looked into and specifically tested that third idea.
Mm-hmm. And what have they found?
Well, so what they have done is they've taken a look at the fossil record for these big cats all the way back through the last 20 million years, and they've looked at the fossil records for their prey as well. And what they found is that when the prey was abundant, these cats, these saber-toothed cat species, were also abundant. And when the diversity of the prey dropped, the numbers of these cats dropped. And so they're seeing a correlation between prey and these big cats through time.
So they weren't able to just adapt.
Yeah, exactly. So they really were just responding to prey availability. And so what has happened is that when the prey numbers were really knocked down in the last 50 to 1,000 to 10,000 years, that really was the final nail in the coffin for saber-toothed cats. And so their extinction was almost certainly tied to the loss of their prey.
Oh, so I guess they were really fussy eaters. They couldn't just adapt to what else they had. They had to...
And that's exactly it. And so saber-toothed, as the name suggests, have a specialized adaptation, which is these, you know, long teeth, that these saber teeth. And so that really was channeling them into a particular prey type. And sure enough, as soon as that prey type was gone, the tigers could no longer be sustained.
Right on. There aren't any similar kinds of cats in the feline. What's the family line, is there?
Yeah, so not with that specialist jaw adaptation. So there are still certainly big cats, and we tend to associate that with Africa. But yeah, as I just mentioned, that similar type of fauna was actually found in North America as well, but just not with these large canines. So we just don't have an equivalent species like that today.
Yeah, right on. I'll go on to your final topic here. We've got penguins go with the flow. You're talking about how they can get around more efficiently in the ocean. Do you want to go into what you've brought about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I am going to ask a slightly loaded question, but to get into this, and that is, if I could just have from you both, what is the best animal, please?
The best animal.
Animal in general, or just...
Yeah, absolutely.
The best? I was going to say my favorite, or... I mean, I feel like that's the question that I haven't been asked since I was in primary school. But you know, when I was in primary school, I did really like penguins. I was, you know, I feel like everyone kind of has that animal that they just choose to become obsessed with. And yeah, I quite like penguins when I was little. So.
Yeah, I'm curious to know what the difference between best and favorite animal is.
Oh, absolutely.
Say, yeah, go on.
Sure, I just wanted to say...
How do you define best? Sure. I think that's quite subjective.
I just wanted to set the tone for this piece to really convey my excitement for it, just because I'm going to follow
you
up.
You think penguins are the best?
Yeah, penguins are quite frankly...
Well, that's what I thought when I was like five, exactly. So yeah.
Scientifically proven.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, well, that's good to know.
Yeah, as a scientist, I can declare that penguins are...
I was onto something when I was like 5 years old.
Exactly.
Let's go.
So I want to talk about one particular penguin species of the roughly 18 or 19 that there are out there. And that this is Magellanic penguin. So this is a group of penguins that live around Southern America today, from Argentina around through to Brazil. Mm-hmm. These are a penguin that's roughly 70 centimeters tall, maybe 5 kilograms. And what's really amazing about them is they have, on average, a 50 kilometer round trip to get their food every day, which is a long way if you're a fairly little animal. And the very impressive thing about this is they're not relying on visual cues, because think about it from a penguin's point of view. You dive into the ocean and it's all water until you get to where you're going. That's all you're seeing is water, and you turn around, it's all water all the way back.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you navigate all the way back on this return trip? And how do you deal with that when the weather changes and there are incredibly strong currents? So this is what this group of researchers from the Max Planck Institute set about to find out. And they put little trackers, little data loggers, on the backs of 27 of these Magellanic penguins from the San Lorenzo Magellanic penguin colony in Argentina. And what they found is that on calm days, these penguins are essentially heading straight out and straight back. So that doesn't really help us with our visual cue question. But what they also observed is that when it gets a little bit choppy and the currents are up, they just relax into the currents and they will just drift along in the direction of the currents, even though that completely takes them off course from heading back to home. But the most incredible discovery here is they observed that these penguins will then start to arc around. They'll start to make little micro changes to their course. So they're relaxing into the current, not fighting it, conserving energy, but just tiny little changes, and eventually will just loop their way back around, essentially using the current in a way to help them save energy, but they'll ultimately make it back. And so that's one of the reasons that these animals are so amazing. It doesn't address how they're able to return home with visual cues, but what it does tell us is that when they're out there swimming, when they let themselves drift along with the current, they're actually able to correct for it and still factor that in to their navigation.
Mm. Is that something that's been tested with other sea animals, like sharks or stingrays or things like that?
I don't know. So I just came across this story with penguins and I was completely drawn to it just because they are the best animals. But you're right, I should also look at other animals as well.
Yeah, that's quite biased of you. Got to do all your research.
Yeah.
What about like weather events, like for birds or things like that aren't in the water? I imagine there would be, especially like with storms and whatnot, there might be more significant. What, is it more significant in the sky than in the sea with weather changes?
Exactly. It starts to raise all of these questions about navigation, around direct lines, or about being pushed off course. Yeah, no. So while this is just a small story about a penguin, absolutely, it starts to really speak to the bigger world about animal navigation.
Yeah, right on. That's great. Well, now we know that penguins are the best animal.
They just go on little side quests, but always get back to their destination.
Yeah, right.
Like us, yeah.
Conserving energy and whatnot. I think that's everything we're going to talk about. Thank you so much, Daniel. And thank you to MoTat. And thank you, science. We'll be right back after a short break. Keep it on the beat.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MoTat, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.